And good afternoon to all our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International Volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwanga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name's Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm joined by our co-host Mona Hill. And we have a two-part show today. The first half will be with Jill Arnott, who is the executive director of the University of Regina Women's Center. We'll be talking with Jill about International Women's Day on March 8th and the U of R event on March 4th. And the second half of our show will focus on a visit from Gord Barnes, who is a longtime field worker with Amnesty International in Regina, and will discuss the upcoming visit of Alec Neave, Secretary General of Amnesty International Canada, to Saskatchewan, and how you can hear what he has to report, well, what Alec has to report about human rights issues. So good morning, Mona, and good morning, guest.
Good morning.
Hello,
everybody. We have another guest here, too, today, who wants to remain silent. She's hanging out with us, and her name is Kim Karpa, who also works at the University of Regina Women's Center. Good morning, Kim.
Morning.
Nice to have you here. Yes, we have a couple of events coming up next Friday in Regina, and we wanted to highlight them because of the importance of the human rights context. Before we get into it, I wanted to read something that I just pulled off the Amnesty International website, and that is of a woman who is at risk, serious risk, in Iran. Hangama Shahidi has been tortured, and she's fearing execution in Iran for demanding equal rights for women. She's a freelance journalist and a women's rights activist, and currently she's in Tehran's notorious Evin prison, and she was tortured prior to her trial. She was arrested at the beginning of June 2009. She complained of torture in custody, including by beatings and threats of execution. For the first 50 days of her detention, she was held in solitary confinement in a cell that measured only 1 meter by 2 meters. During her time in confinement, Hangama feared constantly that she was about to be executed. Her captors left her in a room with ropes and knives, which she felt was intended to drive her to commit suicide. Her trial began on November 4th in 2009, and the charges against her included taking part in demonstrations to challenge the presidential election, giving an interview to the media, writing articles on her blog, signing statements addressed to the United Nations about human rights in Iran, and collecting signatures for the Campaign for Equality. Amnesty International believes that these are all forms, valid forms of freedom of expression and association that must be protected under law, not to be against the law. So this is a really serious situation in Iran, and unfortunately, what else have we got here? Oh, let's talk a little bit more about political prisoners. Prisoners of conscience continue to serve prison sentences imposed following unfair trials in previous years. Thousands of arrests are made every year in Iran, mostly during or following demonstrations. Human rights defenders, including journalists, students, and lawyers, are often detained arbitrarily without access to family or legal representation. Torture, especially during periods of pretrial detention, remains commonplace in practices such as execution by stoning and corporal punishment in the way of flogging, amputation, and eye gouging continue to be passed. We will talk a little bit later about what you can do for our listening audience, if you want to make a difference and let the Iranian government know how you feel about Hangama being imprisoned and tortured. I thought I would read this, and this would be a good sort of starting point to talk about why International Women's Day is such an important event, and the fact that this is the 100th year that we're celebrating this year of International Women's Day. And this is the state in the 21st century that we are still at with women's rights.
I think it's we've come to a place where we can certainly afford to look back and celebrate all of the strides that we've made. It wasn't that long ago that women weren't even able to vote. So the fact that women make up the majority of many of the faculties in universities, that we do have the vote, that we were able to make choices around childbearing, having a family and a career, to marry or not to marry, all of those things are certainly worth celebrating in terms of freedoms. But obviously, the case that you've mentioned gives us some pause. We haven't come as far as we would like to, clearly, and there's still work to be done. So I think it's particularly appropriate on the 100th anniversary. You know, we take a look backwards, see where we came from, and look around us and see where it is that we want to be going in terms of charting a course for the future.
Right. And this is not the only place where women are undergoing torture.
Absolutely not. We know that all over the planet, women are the most vulnerable, particularly in places where there is civil unrest and conflict.
Right.
The Sudan, the Congo, just to mention two right off the top of... Mm-hmm. of your head, you know, that sexual torture, all kinds of things that are absolutely unspeakable, and we're sitting by and letting it happen. You know, after Rwanda, we said never again, and yet this stuff continues to happen, and women and children are the most vulnerable in these cases. Mm-hmm. So certainly while we're doing some celebrating, which I think is important, and it's important in terms of staying motivated and refreshed and feeling like it's possible to make change and that there's a reason to go forward, celebrating's important, and taking stock of all of the accomplishments, but absolutely that we need to be also taking stock of where we're at and the things that we have yet to accomplish.
Right. I think one thing that I found really shocking is that in the 21st century, governments such as the Iranian government, other governments who are putting women in prison, who are torturing women, using sex against them as an, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, my brain went dead. I have menopause brain. A weapon. That's the word I wanted. Yes. As a weapon of torture.
Yeah.
A lot of these countries are being supported by Western governments. That's a big concern to me.
Absolutely.
And we're not speaking out against that.
As we tend not to.
Right.
When it's not us.
Right.
Right. It's easy to get comfortable, particularly in the Western world here, to feel like, you know, women are mostly equal. What do we need feminism for? What do we need human rights for? You know, you almost make the same amount of money as a man. You almost have equal rights. You know, you're pretty much there. But that certainly is not the case all over the planet. And while we do enjoy a certain amount of freedom, our own indigenous populations still suffer. We have a number of missing and murdered women here that speaks to the fact that sex is still being used against women, and particularly minority women, and that not everybody's human rights are being protected, not even here in the West, where we take a lot of our freedoms for granted.
Right. Well, one of the statistics that we're very well aware of is that indigenous women in the Western world live at the very base bottom of the economic scale.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The bottom of the social scale as well, I would say.
Yes.
You know, in terms of being targets, our Aboriginal women who have gone missing haven't just disappeared. They've been taken, and they've been taken because they can. They've been targeted for a reason, and we are complicit. Our governments are complicit. Not enough is happening. If it was white women, it would be different.
Yeah, and it frequently is.
Absolutely.
In the media. It frequently is, unfortunately. I mean, I think we can say honestly that there are some strides being made.
Sure.
That some of the police forces are starting to get it.
Absolutely.
And they're starting to make more of an effort. The justice system is beginning to get it and starting to make more of an effort. So hopefully this will continue and it will stop, you know.
We have some social attitudes that we need to address. I mean, it's certainly systemic. Mm-hmm. And racism, given our colonial history, is embedded in all of our systems, but it's our social body as well. We can't just talk about governments, and we can't just talk about systems and how, you know, it's the justice system, it's this system, it's that one, you know, that isn't working, that isn't serving us well, that isn't protecting our people. It's also the way that our social body operates, and our social body isn't busy protecting its members either.
It's that blind eye syndrome or something that I've often called it, is if, you know, if it's not affecting my life particularly, I really don't care. It has nothing to do with me.
That, but I think it also has to do with the color of the people who are disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also has to do with the way that it's reported. Often we're talking about lifestyle, right? And so somehow the victims are then complicit.
right.
somebody's lifestyle. I don't even know what that means, but she, we hear that she, you know, was on the street, or we hear that she had a drug problem, as though having a drug problem makes you somehow less valuable and more deserving of disappearing, of being murdered, of being assaulted.
Right.
And so, yes, I think on some level, you know, if it's not affecting us in our immediate sort of lived lives, that's one thing. But I think also it's easy to think of these particular bodies as disposable bodies.
Right.
And so what does it matter?
Right. Which is a similar problem overseas as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That women are disposable.
Well, and particularly when they're brown.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any shade of brown.
Yeah.
Any shade of not white.
Yeah.
Actually.
Right. Yeah. You know, you talked about... systemic issues. I read something this morning that shocked the hell out of me, because I was under the assumption that this systemic issue was on its way out and it was a dinosaur and part of history in our country. And that is in Manitoba, there's going to be in Winnipeg, there's going to be a rally held at the legislature. I believe it's on Friday. I think it's tomorrow afternoon, due to a judge in a rape case telling the woman that because I believe it was because she had been drinking, that her actions, even though she had said no, implied permission, and that I don't know, and he sort of stated that it was your own fault you were raped because you implied permission even though you said no because of what you were wearing. He had asked her what she was wearing. According to the judge, she was dressed inappropriately, so it would be okay for someone to just take her and have sex with her despite the fact that she had said no. I thought this was gone with the dinosaurs. This is years old we've been fighting this.
Well, we give a lot of good lip service to the right to bodily integrity and freedom from harm. We certainly don't see that play out. And it is absolutely the same attitude that we see in the cases of the missing and murdered Aboriginal women. It is very much that attitude that somehow you're complicit, that you're deserving, that right. you asked for it by what you were wearing, by where you were, why were you outside, why were you in that neighborhood, what were you doing? What were you doing to right. invite this? And we see it, whether it's as overt as having it actually said or stated in some sort of way during a trial, but for all of the cases that don't actually go to trial and that aren't reported, this is often what's at the bottom of it.
Right. And that's the major issue.
An unwillingness to put yourself as a victim on trial.
Right. Why would I report it if they're going to blame me for it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it continues. Never stops.
And it gives permission to those who wish to violate the bodily integrity of somebody else, because it's easy to get away with it if the system isn't going to stop you and the victims won't tell because they don't feel they can.
Right. Exactly.
A 12-year-old girl was blamed as well in our
that's
own province.
Right. Yeah, and that's
as though at 12 you're able to.
3 or 4 years ago that occurred. Yeah. At least it seems like it's not that long ago.
It's not that long ago, yeah. And she was 12.
And this had to do with the fact that the judge stated she had been engaged in some sort of sexual contact within the family, and thus she had, I don't know, a more sexually matured mind or something that she. Like it just that
despite
one
the fact
too.
That the
despite
law
the fact
says
she was 12 years old, and yeah, and that the law states
even if you're 14 and in a relationship with a peer,
mm-hmm.
it's still not okay, and you still don't have the capacity to be making that decision. But in this case, and she wasn't white either,
right? And it was,
and they were the perpetrators.
How many
were.
Was three?
Yes,
three
grown men,
adult grown men. Yeah, exactly. So we get back to the purpose of this conversation. This is going to be International Women's Day on March 8th. Where have we come from? Where are we going? You know, 100 years ago, we got the right to vote, didn't we?
We
it
did.
It was 100 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was,
and we,
okay.
We,
I'm thinking it was in the 1920s.
We can own property. We are considered persons,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, we weren't.
Right.
So there certainly, I mean, that's a victory. I feel really glad that I'm no longer in the category of children or lunatics. You know, that's a real treat for me.
Yeah. Okay.
But despite those things, you know, that we do have freedoms to sort of run our lives, and we don't need to ask permission to, most of us don't need to ask permission to go to work, to spend our money the way that we choose, to have children or not have children, to access birth control, to travel freely, you know, both sort of within our social body and across the planet.
Right.
But that is not the case for everyone, and not just for people who live not here and not in our immediate sort of sphere, also for people here. Domestic violence is a profound issue in this community. There are tons of women who do not have access to the kinds of freedoms that some of us take for granted.
That's right.
We have, you know, intergenerational cycles of abuse, of addiction. We're dealing with residential school legacy, the fallout from that, and all of the horror that goes along with that. that is the immediate world that we live in. It is our everyday lives. This is our community. And so certainly there are goals that we need to be mindful of and steps that we need to be taking to ensure that the kinds of freedoms that some of us have are extended to all of us.
We've done a few shows about homelessness on Human Rights Radio. One of the things that keeps occurring and keeps popping up is the lack of housing for women and women with children. If you're not in a situation of domestic violence, if you are, it's hard enough to get into a shelter.
They're always full. That's, and there's always one. A wait list.
Number two, when you get to the shelter issue, is oftentimes it's the woman who's the victim and the children who are the victims who are being taken out of their home and put somewhere else, rather than the other way around. So the perpetrator has still got this nice home to live in, mm-hmm. and everybody else has to suffer. So you're becoming victimized in two ways.
Absolutely.
So if it happens to be a domestic violence situation, this is what is occurring. If it's not a domestic violence situation, if a woman ends up just being homeless for other reasons, there's such a lack of support and housing, emergency shelter for her and for her children. It's ridiculous in this city.
Absolutely. We have a profound, it's a huge gap in service. We have a number of gaps in service, in my estimation. That's certainly one of them. And we have buildings that are empty.
Mm-hmm.
That could be used, that could be renovated, that could be serving our community. Homelessness itself, not to mention, though, that lots of people are living in conditions that are absolutely abhorrent.
Right.
And
they may have a roof over their
head,
but certainly not safe.
Not in any way safe.
Right.
The housing issue is huge here. Rent has gone up. It's next to impossible to find something decent. If you happen to be on social assistance, it's even harder. If your children are in care and you're trying to get them back, meeting the requirements is extraordinarily difficult. Social assistance is not a huge amount of money to live on. A lot of people think that welfare is a really good time, and people love to be on it because of how it's so rewarding.
There are no rewards to living on assistance.
There really aren't, and it's extraordinarily difficult to get off if you ever find yourself in a situation where you need to access that resource. Mm-hmm. It's extremely difficult, and it makes housing in particular very difficult.
Yeah, I'm aware of people currently who are expected to spend more than half of their monthly income on housing, which is an impossibility in most cases. They're suffering terribly. The children are suffering.
Absolutely. How do you provide food? How do you pay bills? How do you? Mm-hmm. It's hard for lots of us, just with the cost of housing and cost of living going up. But if you are not bringing in, a huge income, it's really, really difficult. And if it's a single parent household and you're trying to find childcare, mm-hmm. So there's a number of obstacles just anyway. But if your most basic need is not met, which is that you have no shelter.
Right.
Where do you go? What do you do?
Well, there was a woman found dead behind
Absolutely.
A building in Regina 2 weeks ago.
Well, and that's just it. In this province, we cannot afford to have inadequate emergency shelter because of how it's cold here. And it actually is taking your life into your hands when you go out the door.
Yeah.
On lots of occasions for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So not to have an adequate amount of emergency shelter is despicable, I think, on the part of our sort of systems, on the part of our governments. We have empty buildings. Why aren't we converting them and using them to house our people? It's our community. This is it's a basic human need, and it's a basic human right as well.
Adequate housing is a human right issue.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And we know that women in any population are among the most vulnerable to poverty, to violence, to exploitation.
Right.
That's no different in this community than anywhere else. Yeah. On the planet, those are the things that link us, right? Is that this sort of work globally mm-hmm. is common.
Right.
And those are sort of, I think, can be some of the overarching goals, right? When we're reaching out and making connections to women in other parts of the planet, that right. we share some of these same struggles, despite the fact that we live in the Western world, and the Western world likes to think of itself as being so on top of things and so developed, and we're on the ball and we've cornered the market. We haven't. And that those kinds of things are certainly where we can be learning from organizations in other parts of the world that are taking a more creative approach.
And speaking of the rest of the world, International Women's Day will be celebrating Indigenous women.
Absolutely.
To a great degree this year. Let's move forward and talk about that and what's happening at the university in the Language Institute on Friday, March 4th.
Friday, March 4th from 9 until 1. It's a celebration. It's an educational. It's a time for conversation and a time for some reflection, as I said, in terms of where do we want to be going. Given that it's 100 years, we've tried to really focus on having sort of an intergenerational context, because we have women in our community that can speak to us about the changes that have happened that some young women might not be aware of, who take sort of for granted the life that they enjoy today, the freedoms and the rights that they have today. The world wasn't always this way.
Right.
And it's important to revisit that. We don't stand on super firm ground where some of this stuff is concerned, and it's important to know what the battles were to get to where we are. And then by the same token, though, to have conversation with young women about what are the battles that they are facing. Mm-hmm. You know, what does the world look like for them? How are they navigating it? What are the big challenges?
Right.
So that we can, again, plot a course sort of for the future. And certainly I think that includes, it hasn't always and doesn't always include Indigenous voices, but that is one of the focuses for this year, is to focus on what the Aboriginal women have sort of been experiencing, what their contributions have been. We're going to have an Indigenous rights speaker come.
Right, Suzanne Durange will be speaking. Yeah.
Have a conversation with us and encourage some questions and some sort of interaction between the audience and panels and speakers about where we're going and how can we be more inclusive and how can we build bridges and work together to hopefully check off a few more of these things on the to-do list in terms of securing some rights.
I'm really excited about this because it brings us, as you talked earlier about the Western world and, you know, our side of the world, it brings us together with, and when we talk about economic status as well, it brings people at the university together with people who maybe do not have a secondary education, with young women, with mature women who have been around for a long time, who are maybe at the beginning of the fight for human rights for women and the feminist revolution. So this is really exciting for me to see someone coming in to speak about what the Indigenous women of the world in the last 100 years have accomplished and what they can teach us. It's really important for us to learn. And this is something that I believe we miss out on oftentimes.
Every day.
In our society, we just miss out on what we can learn from those who have been here a lot longer than us.
Absolutely.
In our society and from other places in the world as well.
Mm-hmm. We have a different way of doing things, mm-hmm. right? A different view of the world, a different model, a different framework for understanding. Certainly, we know there are lots of ways to walk in the world. And as I said before, the West likes to think that we are leading the march and that it's the best way. And that's not always the way. We've done some serious damage. Capitalism has not served our planet very well. It's not serving any of us very well if we're not going to have a planet to live on. Mm-hmm. So I think learning from some... certainly our Indigenous population here, but also in terms of globally, right? Different ways to be, mm-hmm. different ways to relate to the world and to relate to each other, to perhaps engage a different model and see if it can't work a little better for us as sort of a collective community, a global community, right?
Right.
And
well,
then here
and that's
as well.
True. It is. It's a global community. And to be able to honor that. It is, for me, is an honor to be able to do that.
For sure, and to celebrate the things that we all bring.
One of the celebration things that we're going to be doing, is, as far as I remember, because I'll be there, we'll be asking the participants to talk about a woman who has meant something to them, who has been an inspiration in their life. What about that? How's that going to work?
I think it's important because all the things that we've talked about so far today, right, it can be overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
There's the list of things that is not working out that still needs to be done, all of the horrible things, the unspeakable things that human beings do to each other. It can be extraordinarily overwhelming and feel like, how am I ever even going to begin to make any sort of difference that's worthwhile? It starts with one. We know that. All it takes is one person to have made a difference in your life that changes the course of your life, that sets you on a particular path. And so taking some time that day to reflect on the women who have really inspired us, who've fought for us, who fought for this world, for this life, I think is a way to sort of renew the spirit, to rejuvenate our sort of energies for the work that is to go forward, right? Because then we have the opportunity to see that, yes, it is possible to make a difference. And these women that we're talking about have made differences. They have changed the world because they've changed our lives.
Yeah. I think if we remember where we came from, we will have a better path to where we're going.
To go forward. Yep. We stand on the shoulder of giants.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get here ever by yourself.
Right.
And so having the opportunity to look back, to appreciate that, to learn some lessons, and to mm-hmm. think about how we can improve on some of the strategies.
Right. So if people want to come and join us on March 4th at university, how do we do it?
Anybody can come. The event itself is free. You need to call SCIC, the Saskatchewan Council for International Cooperation, at 757-4669 to register. If you'd like, there will be a snack provided in the morning, and if you'd like to join us for lunch, there's a fee of $10 just to cover cost.
It's going to be a good lunch, too.
It's going to be a great lunch. Yeah. And for students, the cost will be $5.
Okay.
But that's just for the lunch if you're planning to stay. Otherwise, the event itself is free, so by all means, come on out.
Right. And that's accessible as well?
It absolutely is, yeah. It's in the theater, in the Language Institute at the U of R, and I believe that parking is free in Lot 4, but that could be confirmed by contacting SCIC.
Yeah, I think we got confirmation that parking is available.
Yeah, and I believe it's Lot 4. We were just sort of waiting. I think that's right, but you know, you would want to double check that just to make sure in case I've made an error.
Yeah. So, last words before we wrap up?
Just come join us. It's a good opportunity to be part of your community, to do some networking, and to meet people that perhaps you haven't met before that might have similar interests and that might be working on stuff that you would like to work on.
And we also would like to note that last year, during International Women's Day at the university, we had some males attending.
Of course. We
were thrilled that they had come out. We were happy to see them, that they're interested in our issues, and that they're very supportive. So any guys that want to come out and support us, you're more than welcome to show up.
You have women in your lives. You've got a mother. You have a sister. You have a girlfriend. You have friends, and we're all in this together either way, right? So what affects women is affecting men as well. So please come and celebrate with us.
All right. And on that note, thank you very much, Jill.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening, Kim. It's been great having you. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Take care, and we'll see you at the university
on
March 4th. Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay,
we're done.
All righty. We've got a minute or so here. I'm just going to tell
you. Well, we can talk about what's happening after the break.
Okay. And I just wanted to mention we're going to have some music afterwards. My favorite, one of my favorites, Queen Latifah. I got a track from Queen Latifah. So stay in there. We'll be talking to Gord Barnes next.
a struggle that we have yet to win. Use that pride in our hearts to lift us up to tomorrow. Cause just to sit still would be a sin.
I know it, I know it, I know where I'm going.
Lord knows, I know where I've been.
Oh, everywhere I give thanks to my God, cause I know where I've been.
Oh, you gotta love Queen Latifah.
Dana Owens.
Oh, Dana Owens.
That's her real name,
right?
In case you didn't know.
Well, I think
she has an album out called the Dana Owens Album, and
okay.
It's old jazz standards. It's fabulous.
Wow. Yeah.
There's some trivia.
Hi, Gord.
Fun to listen to. Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Right.
Yeah. This is the Human Rights Radio Show on CJTR, and I'm Mona Hill, and I'm here with Jim Hutchings. We are here with Gord Barnes for the second half of the show, and we're going to be talking about the visit of Alex Neave, our Secretary General of Canada for Amnesty International, and a few other events that are coming up in the very near future with our Amnesty group here. Take it away, Gord.
Well, thanks, Mona and Jim, for having me on this second half of the show. We're really excited, actually, that Alex is able to be here next week. Alex Neave is the Secretary General of the Canadian section of Amnesty International. It means he's the senior staff person and spokesman for the organization in Canada. He's actually coming to Saskatoon, Regina, and Moose Jaw while he's visiting here, and has a number of events. I thought I'd mention the ones in Regina to start with, because they're probably the people who are listening on this program will be most interested. We're really pleased that the International Studies Program at the University of Regina has partnered with us to host Alex on Thursday, March 3rd. And he'll be speaking at the university. It's a public event, so it's certainly open to everybody in the university community, but also members of the public. It'll be at 11:30, from 11:30 a.m. to 12:45. In room 215 of the Language Institute. And the theme of his talk that day will be Canada and the International Protection of Human Rights, Have We Lost Our Way? So I think that'll be an interesting presentation he will be giving, and we'll encourage everybody to, you know, if you're interested in human rights issues, to come out and listen to Alex. He's got I guess one of the things is he's got a tremendous background by virtue of his role with Amnesty International and experience in terms of traveling around the world. And
definitely a globetrotter.
That's right. Mona and Jim, you were able to have him on the program. You'll recall, and I believe it was September 2009 when he was last in Regina.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. He wasn't a bad guest at that. And the most exciting thing about it, I think, was that he told us that was how he started getting involved in human rights issues, was by having a community radio show at the university when he was a law student.
That's right. It goes back. That story goes back many years. He was actually a law student at Dalhousie University at the time. And he, along with some other folks there, hosted a regular program about human rights issues and the work Amnesty International was doing at that time. Of course, since then, at that time he was obviously a volunteer, but since that time he's actually been with the organization in a staff role for the last 10 years. And by virtue of doing that, he's had the opportunity and, I guess, the difficult responsibility being part of Amnesty International research missions to places where there are very significant human rights concerns around the world. And just to mention a few, this would include having traveled to Guatemala, to Colombia, but also to Chad. He's been there a number of times. And, you know, the visits to Chad that he has experience with really relate to the overflow of the conflict in Sudan. And the stories he's told by virtue of the research and the human rights issues there are quite remarkable. The other area he has been part of the research missions, and this just is fairly recent, he's been part of the Amnesty International delegations when they had the hearing relative to Omar Khadr.
Right.
And he's spoken quite eloquently about the human rights issues involved in that, in terms of the imprisonment of a young person, a Canadian citizen, in Guantanamo. So he's really got a range of experience, and we're looking forward to him being back here. I guess the second event that I should mention is actually on Friday, March 4th, that he'll be speaking at. And that event is in the evening, and it therefore works well for everybody in the community to attend.
Because we want them to attend International Women's Day at the university in the morning.
That's right. Yeah, there's lots going on.
So if you want to meet Mona, you can come out to both events.
Right.
Meet Mona, Gort, and Jim.
And the evening event is at 7 o'clock. It's, we're describing it as a potluck dessert, and Alex will be talking. The theme of that particular talk will be Amnesty International After 50 Years, Looking Back and Looking Forward. And that event's actually hosted by not only the Regina Amnesty International Community Group, but also the newly formed, and this is quite exciting news, University of Regina Amnesty International Club. So we've got a lot of people involved in that event. And, you know, I mentioned the theme is Amnesty International After 50 Years, Looking Back and Looking Forward. And, you know, it's kind of a timely thing because this year we are actually celebrating the Amnesty International's 50th anniversary. And while we'll be at times celebrating, there's obviously lots of work to do, reflecting on where we've been over those last 50 years of human rights work, and also looking forward about how we can be more effective in terms of the work we undertake as human rights activists. So I'm personally looking forward to Alex's talk and pleased that he's able to be here. The thing that I was very pleased about that developed in the last few months is I mentioned this second event on March 4th is not only hosted by the Regina Community Group, but it's also hosted by the University of Regina Amnesty International Club. It's a fairly recent development for us. We had one a number of years ago, and then for a while, people in the university community kind of worked with the community group. But more recently, there's been a real exciting initiative where a number of students have come together and decided to start a club on campus, and we're really supportive of that. They've been having a number of events on campus where they've had displays, talking to students and other people on campus about Amnesty International's human rights work. They've got some events of their own coming up in March, including a fundraiser. So, you know, people on campus might want to kind of watch for them. They're a very energetic group, and we're glad to see their involvement in human rights work.
That was really exciting on December 10th as well, that they were very supportive of our event.
That's right. Yeah. December 10th this year was a very successful initiative. You know, it's a tough time of year for students because many of them are busy studying for exams and all that. But despite that, we had a really good turnout, not only from the community, but also from the university.
Yeah, it's good to have them on board with us.
So we're encouraging everybody to consider looking at both events. They're on our website if you need the details, at amnestysaskatchewan.ca. If you've got friends in Saskatoon or Moose Jaw, you might want to let them know as well about the events that are being held in both those communities. Alex will be speaking at a provincial conference, actually, in Moose Jaw Friday morning on March 4th. It's the Subject Council for the Saskatchewan Teachers Federation for Social Sciences. And he's actually the keynote speaker there on the Friday morning. And that's sort of what brought him to Saskatchewan initially as part of this trip. And he'll be meeting with some Amnesty International members and supporters in Moose Jaw over the noon hour on March 4th. So he's got a pretty full schedule. I think anybody who has an opportunity to listen to him and hear his experiences, his vision, his commitment will be impressed. This is an exciting opportunity for us.
Absolutely.
I was just going to mention at this point, there is a great article in the Prairie Dog, and you can access it online at prairiedog.com/news/province.
Right.
So if you have a look there, they're talking about Alex's visit and also talking about the discussion that he's going to have with Judge Arnott up in Saskatoon about the Human Rights Commission.
Right. Want to talk about that, Gord?
That'll be on Wednesday, March 2nd in Saskatoon in the evening, and a good opportunity for people in Saskatoon to hear about Amnesty International's thoughts with respect to proposed legislation on the Saskatchewan Human Rights Commission and the change that's being proposed in that regard. I again would sort of reference, if you're needing to get the detail about that, our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca, where you can find all the details about the location and stuff.
Can you get through our website through our Facebook page?
Yes, it's also on Facebook. Everybody who's interested, you know, we're on Facebook at Amnesty International Saskatchewan, and we'd encourage you to connect with us that way, because that way you'll know about upcoming events. There is another event that perhaps while we're talking about what's going on with Amnesty International locally, coming up fairly soon as well, that's an important event, and that is on Friday, March 18th. The Regina Community Group will be having its annual meeting, and we'll be having it in the evening at 7 o'clock. The guest speaker is well-known in the community, Darlene Yushka, who's a professor of gender studies and women's studies at the University of Regina. So we encourage everybody to consider coming out to that event as well. That's, again, it's March 18th.
And where is it at, Gord?
And that'll be at the CNIB. We've decided to have it there. It's a good central location. If you're not familiar with where it is, it's just at the corner of Broad and Broadway, and easy to get to by bus or if you're driving. So we'd hope people will turn out for that meeting as well. The reason that's particularly important is, in addition to our guest speaker, is, you know, the annual meeting is an opportunity for people to who have an interest in and perhaps volunteering for our group, considering participating in a more active way, and you can come out and find out about what we're all about, but if you're interested, even consider participating as a more active volunteer on the executive, which is a crucial thing, because we do need a core group of people who have an interest in working together as a team and have different, I guess, experiences and talents they can contribute. The annual meeting is really the opportunity to you know, become involved and express an interest in working with others on Amnesty International's human rights work.
How much time have we got, Jim?
Oh, we've got about 10 minutes.
Oh, great. So we got 10 minutes to fill up about Amnesty International.
That's great.
That's good. Let me ask you something, Gort. We introduced you as having been around for quite a while. I was going to introduce you as the old member, but I thought better of that because I didn't want to insult you. But you've been working with Amnesty in Saskatchewan for over 30 years, haven't you?
That's right. It's been a while.
And sometimes I'll refer to Gord as Mr. Amnesty. I mean, you've seen a lot of changes, I would imagine. A lot of good things happening. Can you give us a little bit of history about the changes that you've seen?
Well, you know, there's ups and downs over the years in terms of the level of activity in Amnesty International and volunteer commitment. And we've experienced all that in not only this organization and many others. The change I think is exciting to see is a continual sort of support for Amnesty International, but more recently, we've got better at it in terms of connecting with each other, and that's the exciting evolution locally.
We're talking about partnerships, aren't we?
That's right. I think there are obviously people who have an interest in working as volunteers with Amnesty International, but other folks have a strong human rights commitment, and the way they voice that or express that might be by participating and volunteering with other organizations. So what I think we've done is try to reach out and work with people in other organizations in the community. I'm thinking of people like Oxfam as an example,
right.
Mm-hmm. Who are just doing tremendous work internationally.
And some are faith-based as well.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Many of the faith-based groups. One of the things that makes all this easier, obviously, is the social networking you can do by virtue of the internet and Facebook and now with our webpage, and it just makes it a lot easier to connect with each other and not only locally here in Regina, but people who might live in other cities in Saskatchewan or rural communities. And, I think back to when I first got involved, really the internet did not frankly exist. The way we first got notices of people who we were writing letters about was by fax. The international movement was aware perhaps that somebody was in trouble and being imprisoned in a difficult circumstances in a country, and there was a risk of torture. Well, people around the world would receive faxes about that and then do some letter writing by distributing the faxes. It wasn't necessarily an efficient way of doing things or quick.
It was all we had.
But that's what we had at the time, right?
Yeah.
So the way things have evolved now is really quite an interesting thing. We don't want to kind of forget, though, the importance, even though we've got the social networking opportunities through the internet and other things, the importance about having conversations with our friends and neighbors and mm-hmm. people in other organizations just on a personal level, because unless we kind of are prepared to have those conversations with people, we're really only then talking to ourselves, and there's a risk of that. So mm-hmm. you know, the evolution has been an interesting one. The other thing that has changed is obviously the areas of work, and that's one of the things we've talked about on Human Rights Radio previously, about how Amnesty International itself has evolved in terms of our mandate. We work on a wider range of human rights issues now than we initially did when we were started about 50 years ago. And I think that's a good thing. It's well supported by the members. We're a broader human rights organization in terms of where we draw our membership from. And by virtue of that, a more diverse one, and that's a healthy thing.
Absolutely. But, you know, Gord, I'd like to go back to what you were talking about earlier regarding partnerships, and I'd like to mention one partnership that's especially meaningful to us at Amnesty here in Saskatchewan, and that's the partnership with the Regina Making Peace Vigil. This is a group of people who stand outside on Scar Street, rain or shine, minus 40 below wind chill, or, you know, plus 30 or 40 in the summer, and they pass on information to our citizens who are downtown about human rights issues that are important to them and important to us. And one of the things they do that helps us so much in Amnesty is they're willing to pass out information that we have so that we can get in touch with the public that maybe doesn't know about us, that doesn't know what we do. And yesterday they were out there passing out the flyers for the two events coming up next Friday, Thursday and Friday at the university, and then again at, it was at Sunset United Church. So thanks and kudos to the Regina Making Peace Vigil. We're very grateful to have you as partners.
Right. They are wonderful folks and very committed in terms of their volunteer work in raising issues in the community. Just to clarify, though, the location with respect to March 4th is at All Saints Anglican Church.
All Saints. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Erase.
Yeah.
And maybe what we'll do is go over that then.
Yeah,
sure. We'll go over all the events, where they're taking place,
okay,
and what times.
Okay. So the very first one is Thursday, March 3rd. Alex Neve will be speaking at the University of Regina. It'll be held in room 215 of the Language Institute. So that's Thursday, March 3rd. It'll be from 11:30 to 12:45. And that one is hosted by the International Studies Program at the Faculty of Arts. The Friday night event is Friday, March 4th. The theme of Alex's speech or talk will be Amnesty International After 50 Years Looking Back and Looking Forward. And that'll be at All Saints Anglican Church at 142 Massey Road, and that's just south of Campbell Collegiate.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is hosted not only by the Regina Community Group for Amnesty International, but also the Amnesty International University of Regina A Club.
Right. And for those who are listening outside of Regina to Human Rights Radio, Alex is going to Saskatoon, and he's going to Moose Jaw as well.
Right.
Saskatoon's going to be very interesting. You brought the article from the Prairie Dog with you. There was an article written about what he's going to be speaking about, and it's sort of almost, I would suggest, maybe a debate with our Human Rights Commissioner of Saskatchewan, David Arnott, on changes to our Human Rights Code in Saskatchewan.
Right, and that'll be in the evening, on Wednesday, March 2nd, in Saskatoon. It's at the Francis Morrison Library, but again, you can find all the stuff on our website. I should mention as well, while he's in Saskatoon, he is speaking at the university in the afternoon, and I'm sure you'll be able to find the detail about that quite easily by going either to our Facebook group or to our website. And then, as we mentioned earlier, he'll be speaking in Moose Jaw on Friday, March 4th at noon for an opportunity to meet Amnesty International members and supporters in that area of the province as well.
Wonderful. Thanks for being on, Gord.
Thank you.
It's been good having you again.
Good to be back.
And we're going to sign off in a minute or two.
Right now.
Right now. Oh, okay. Oh, I just want to say Salam to Rehan in Pakistan. I know you listen to the show every week, and you told us that you're learning a lot about Canada and a lot about human rights.
Okay, as we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. We're volunteers with Amnesty International, and our goal is to increase the awareness of and contribute to a discussion of human rights issues at home and around the world. Every day and every moment in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. No one individual can respond to all the problems of the world, of course. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, just help one. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to cjtr.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said it's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness.